Welcome to the Terminal Velocity Podcast, Issue 1. This one's titled Welcome to Black Hammer. I am one of your hosts, Scott.
And I'm Andrew.
And on today's show, we're going to cover, in our All Points Bulletin, we're going to go over some of the news of the week, some of the top stories that we feel like covering.
Some real zingers.
Yeah, we're going to get through the Tapping the Speed Force, where we're going to talk a little bit about what the current state of the Flash comic is and whether we're what we're enjoying and what we're not enjoying.
Wally's the Flash.
Wally is back, so that's a good bonus for it. Hyper timing, we're going to actually get into the core Black Hammer book, one of the my personal favorites that's of the new breed of comics that's out right now. I think it's an absolutely fantastic book, so I really want to cover that.
It's quickly climbing the charts for me since you recommended it.
Yeah, that's good. Running the Cosmic Treadmill, we're going to discuss Bruce Wayne, Murder and Fugitive. This is a book that I recently read. Andrew read a while ago, so he's going to live through my pains with the story and talk about what he enjoyed.
And he'll see my nostalgic view of it, having read this before Batman, Hush, Rebirth, anything. So it'll be interesting to see where we stand on it.
Yeah, because you really recommended this, so I'm looking forward to talking about that a little bit more. We're going to get into, we'll probably end the actual podcast with I Don't Get It, a little conversation about Iron Man and kind of
why he's so popular.
Yeah, why is he so popular? It's a bit of a conundrum for us. But before that, we're going to get into our pick of the weeks. And I personally think my pick of the week is going to surprise you.
I'm curious to see. I'm really intrigued based on, not,
on the
your
teaser that I've just put through.
Okay. I think I'll decide my pick of the week while we record.
That's cheating, but I'm okay with it.
It's in there. I'll, by the time we get there, I'll have my pick.
Okay. So let's jump right into some of the news that we want to talk about from this week. One of the articles that jumped out at me, and I think it's appropriately so, given some of the details that I think you're going to want to be talking about, is Dave Gibbons' kind of apology regarding The Watchmen and kind of its lasting effect that it's had on the industry, well, from the 80s.
Everything is dark and gritty.
Yeah, I think the current state of what we're dealing with right now, particularly on the DC side. I don't know that this has necessarily felt the same way on the Marvel books. I mean, Marvel certainly gets dark on some things, but they seem to still get fun.
Yes and no. I mean, Spider-Man certainly went through a really strange era through the 90s with dark and gritty. Well, as dark and gritty as, you know, Spider-Man losing his unborn child and, you know, his life and
Dude.
His aunt.
Downer.
Thanks, Dave Gibbons.
Thanks, Dave Gibbons. So he released a bit of an apology at recently, just talking about the misery that it's kind of brought on. And I thought that was fitting, especially with what leads into one of the other articles talking about kind of what's going on with Nightwing.
DC's, I don't know if this is like their semi-annual kind of plan for Nightwing, where they've got him really good and then he's got to drop down to this dark and horrible place. We remember the Devin Grayson run, or we try to forget. But now Nightwing is going in a bold new direction with issue number 50. Spinning out of the fake Bat Wedding, there is now a hit on Nightwing set up by Bane, and he's going to be, spoilers, shot in the head. He's going to survive and have a new shaved head look with a little Nightwing logo shaved into the bullet wound area.
I'm hoping that's just on the cover art. That's not really going to make it into. Because that kind of defeats the purpose of having a secret identity.
I really hope so.
Because I don't think Dick Grayson doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to get a lightning bolt shaved into his head. Nike swoosh into his head. I don't see that being his style.
Maybe he's going to have a 90s throwback. I don't know. I don't know why DC thinks they have to like kick down Nightwing. He's kind of like the pinnacle of hope and what can be for a DC hero. Kind of the inspiration and almost like leader that brings all the heroes together, including the Justice League. And they just feel they've got to like knock him down, like cripple him. I don't mean to be like odd in my phrasing there, but it just seems like they always have to like knock him down in such a way that he just can't be the inspirational character that he is.
It's an interesting take on him, especially after, just to jump ahead for 2 seconds into some of the comics that came out this week in the most recent issue of Batman. It's going to be a huge shift to take him from how he was portrayed there if they in fact go you know, amnesia, doesn't remember anything except potentially just his training, and get more dark and everything like that. Like, it's going to be a huge shift from that. That being said, I'm not currently reading the Nightwing book, so I don't know if it's going to be.
Well, I've just jumped back on, and I'm ready to jump back off based on the announced new direction. I'm kind of perturbed about it. You know, like, I get the importance of dealing, like discussing mental health and dealing with disabilities, and it's good on one hand, but the way that it's almost like line wide in response to Heroes in Crisis, which is dealing with similar subject content, but
I know, I'm not going to lie, I'm not looking. I'll read some of that, but I'm not necessarily looking.
Well, with Rebirth, it kind of brought back the fun of DC Comics and the classic kind of like interpretations, and I thought that was a huge success for them. So I'm kind of surprised at the angle that these books are going, but more specifically with Nightwing, and it's traumatic for me as a Nightwing fan, and I'm gonna hold judgment on it. I don't want to go into it too long in this segment, but I have hope that they've got like an end game. Maybe this is gonna tie more directly with the Batman storyline with the wedding and Catwoman. So we'll see.
Okay, fair enough. And to your point, I do hope that it is just a bridge across some of the Bat books, a small thread line. I don't want it to be a massive crossover type thing. I don't think those kind of crossovers work too well on the DC side. Again, we'll talk about a different book where I think it's going to work out really well a little bit later, but that's my take. On another big story or big comic that's been out that's run into delays and things that seems to be impacting all of DC with the Superman theory and everything like that is Doomsday Clock changes. So apparently,
has anyone explained the Superman theory exactly?
No, but there was a little tidbit in the most recent Action Comics where Clark had it on a little post-it on his little iMac.
I suppose I should read that.
That's about as close to a sprinkling of what the hell's going on with that story.
Well, I'm glad he's aware of the theory.
It's kind of important. Apparently, the first six issues and the back six issues of this storyline are going to be very different in tone and direction. So that might be good or bad, depending on what your feelings are of the current six that have come out. It's been few and far between because of the various delays and things. I might be in a small minority. I don't know. I've actually enjoyed some of it. I'm not big on the Watchmen coming into the DC universe, but I am enjoying Jeff Johns' take on Alan Moore doing Watchmen.
Well, I don't mind them coming for a visit, but I hope this isn't long-standing. Like, I don't want Dr. Manhattan running around, you know, palling with Superman or even warring with him. I don't think it's much of a fight if he's as reality-altering as he is hinted at right here.
Well, we're going to find out, because in the next issue they're actually going to have Manhattan, supposedly. They're going to have Manhattan in it. So it'll be interesting. I'm hopeful to see how they're actually going to piece it all together. Like you,
I'm hopeful Doomsday Clock can turn it around. I want to say I like it currently, but I'm not opposed to a shakeup.
Well, the thing is that they've been teasing this since Rebirth number one.
That's true.
Yeah. Right? Like, this has been on the go for a hell of a long time, and they still haven't actually touched it yet. So I just want them to get to the goddamn story and tell me what the fuck is happening.
Is he going to snap his fingers and Batman's costume changes again? I'm curious. Oh, wait, that's the wrong universe.
Yeah, you're getting confused. The other thing that Johns was talking about in the article about the changes here is he was mentioning the back matter and if anybody was reading it. Now, I'm one of the people that read Watchmen and never touched the Black Freighter.
Is that the noir detective movie?
Articles, things, and yeah, so he's got the more prose and everything like that in there. I don't read that stuff. I probably should. The only one that I ever got close to reading that way was Iris Allen West's The Life Story of the Flash, where Mark Waid put that together as like the overall, an actual book about the Flash. And that was as close as I ever got to reading something similar to a back matter, even though that's not back matter. I understand that. So nobody has to freak out, but that's as close as I got to it.
I'm not good with that either. I usually glaze over it. I kind of pretend to read it, even though no one's there to watch or judge me, but I'll just kind of glance over it but not actually read the words.
Anything that looks like it's a big long news article. Anything that looks like, oh, here's the dossier on it.
I'm looking at you, Dark Knight Returns.
I always just kind of fall off. I just can't do those ones.
Well, speaking of... Well, actually, just because I mentioned Batman. There is finally a resolution to the Deathstroke versus Batman story, which settles the Damian Wayne's true parentage storyline. Surprise, spoilers if any of you care. Bruce Wayne is, in fact, Damian's biological father. However, in the story, Bruce Wayne decides that he doesn't need to know the results of the DNA test and throws the results in the fire. He basically states that Damian's his son no matter what. It doesn't really matter to him. He's his son regardless of DNA. But as the panel shows, the results are burning up. You see that Bruce Wayne is, in fact, Damian's father. So that, yeah. Thanks, Chris Priest.
Shocker of non-shockers.
Yeah, he's still like it was dead. Kind of just fluff, basically.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. He's never treated any of the quote-unquote Bat family as anything but his kids, regardless of actual that's true. Genetics. So,
you know, angry and neglectful
that's well
father,
in but... character for him, I think.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm shocked by the results. It didn't... I think it was more just marketing, just to kind of get you to pay attention to Deathstroke, but yeah, I'm not surprised. Like, there's literally nothing in the character to show that it would have been Slade in to begin with.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that was put to rest.
I just have...
I was losing sleep.
Oh. It was a troubling concern.
It was.
It would have been interesting if he wasn't Bruce's son and went off to be an assassin somewhere to be forgotten in the nether realms of DC. But hey, maybe Damian can win me over.
There's always hope. Another big news story that came out, and this was probably a much broader one that a lot of news outlets picked up, and that was the reveal of Captain Marvel in costume and some of the actual stills from the movie and everything like that. And I personally thought it looked really cool.
It does.
I was especially happy to actually see Skrulls.
Yeah, it's
on screen, and they
exciting.
Don't look bad. They actually, I think the design of them looks pretty good. I think Marvel's done a good job in the movies of really getting a lot of those designs down on.
Well, certainly things. Getting the classic elements of it while making it work for a modern movie experience. Like you don't look at them and think, hey, that looks ridiculous. Like it actually looks like it fits the world, and but it also looks like it's really expanding into that cosmic realm, which will be really cool to see what they do with the Skrulls.
Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm not remotely concerned about the lack of a origin story coming in. I know most people would probably appreciate an origin story, especially on Captain Marvel, a character that, you know, the general public don't know about, but it worked. This is a different scale, but it worked in Homecoming. It's worked in other movies where you don't need a traditional origin story. You can just kind of get going and people will pick it up. The key points that they need to know, you introduce and get moving. And I know there's going to be flashbacks because this movie technically takes part in the 90s. So in one of the stills, she's got her Nine Inch Nails shirt on and
of course.
Her shield cap and that kind of thing. So
I wonder if Nirvana or Green Day are playing too.
Probably on her playlist.
Right.
in her fighter jets.
Samuel Jackson's looking nice and young. You know, a nice 40-year-old Sam Jackson. So
it's scary how good some of that stuff is getting. When the first time I saw it was in, what was that, X-Men 3 with Patrick Stewart. And
which I saw that scene recently, and it does not hold up. But it, you see where it started. Oh, which
I'm
is
not
pretty
fucking
good.
Surprised it doesn't yeah. hold up. It didn't hold up at the time. It was terrifying. It was total shit, but whatever they've
done now...
Yeah, let's
never mention The Last Stand ever again.
Really looking good. So I'm really looking forward to that movie.
Yeah, it's... I think the first time it was truly convincing for me was Civil War with Robert Downey Jr. showing you literally 1990s, or was it 80s? I can't, maybe 80s Downey Jr.
Mm-hmm.
right in front of you. Like, and that was just crazy to me.
Well, even in Ant-Man with
that's true.
With
Michael Douglas yeah.
Mean,
you know what? You're right. Sorry. That would be the first time that it was convincing. It was like Michael really Douglas right out of like Basic Instinct or something.
It was really impressive. So I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait. I was hoping that they were actually going to drop a trailer at the same time. or even if it was just a small teaser. I was really looking forward to it.
It's a little surprising they didn't, and especially with all the leaks that they had with this movie. I would have thought they would have put something out sooner than this, but it's good to see it in full color.
Yeah.
Sticking with the cosmic realm, and this is not exactly comic news, but just wanted to put it out there because I'm a huge fan. Doctor Who Season 11 has finally got a premiere date, Sunday, October 7th. I'm hopeful for this series. It's been a long time. It feels like we haven't had Doctor Who in quite some time, and I'm curious to see where this new direction goes.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch much of the Capaldi run. I watched that first season that he was in it, that he took over. As soon as they turned the sonic screwdriver into sonic sunglasses, they kind of lost me.
Yeah, I kind of tweeted something vicious about that when that happened, but I'm not going to go into that.
And I felt slightly bad.
He did get a new sonic screwdriver, though.
I'm Scottish by birth and by culture, and I wanted him to be a great Doctor Who.
I think he did achieve it by the end. A little uneven, maybe, but at first, yeah, just...
It's
you
hard.
Should give it a shot.
I did really enjoy Smith's run on it.
Yeah, he's
so
cool.
It was a hard...
Eleven's always my doctor.
It was a hard one to come back over. So, you know, I'll be hopeful. I'll check out this new one. I'm totally interested in checking it out and seeing what it is. First female doctor.
Well, it's a fresh start, too. So,
incorporating all the different costumes into her one costume type of thing.
Pretty much.
I think it looks really cool.
I feel like we're going to get a series that feels like the Tennant era. I think they're really going for that vibe and that feeling. So we'll see very
soon.
Hopefully
with practical effects, though, because I think that's really what worked for the Smith run versus the Tennant run.
Yeah,
Tennant was a little heavy on CGI, and I'll be honest, I didn't like it.
CGI has advanced quite a bit since then, but I get your point. It should be interesting to see what they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was some of the news as we saw it, or the topics that we wanted to really cover. Next point that we're going to be moving on to is tapping the Speed Force. So we're going to talk a little bit about The Flash, which is fitting because just in the last 2 weeks, we've had a new issue of The Flash.
That's true.
And this is piggybacking off of some of the stuff that's been going on through Snyder's Justice League book, a direct fallout from the Flash Wars.
As well as Rebirth.
As well as Rebirth, because we've got Wally running full force, and this has got... So when I talk about the Justice League tie-in and the fallout of the Speed Force, or the Flash Wars, is the Speed Force is completely broken, and it's also unleashed a couple different forces. The ones that they cover in Justice League is the Still Force, primarily from the Turtle. And who we can talk about at some other time.
The super baby attached to Grodd's front side.
In his baby Bjorn.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Was it a baby Catan or was it a baby Bjorn? I'm not sure.
I'm going with Bjorn. I feel like Grodd would be on brand and go with the Bjorn. It's a little bit better known of a name. So I feel he would go with it. So that's the Still Force where it basically just slows everything down. Hence the name. And then the one that came out in the most recent issues of The Flash is the Strength Force, which is basically, in these last two issues, spoiler alert, is a hulked-out trickster.
Yes.
I'm going to pause there for a second to let that land on everybody. A hulked-out trickster.
You know, I couldn't help but think of Arkham Asylum, the game. It looks like the Joker on Titan.
It's very jarring. It's very strange. I don't know that I'm fully on board with these additional forces that are out there.
I can't help but think about Wally's kids, and they brought them up again in issue, I want to say, 51,
mm-hmm.
Where he was unsuccessful in finding them. But I remember that the way that their powers came out, at least explained at the time, is augmented by the Speed Force, where... I think it was the daughter who was extra strong, or was it the son? I can't remember, but one came out strong and one came out younger. There's some really wacky stuff, but I'm wondering if this taps into if they're going to tap into these other forces to explain that.
I'm guessing they are. I mean, I know Williams has done a lot of reading through a whole slew of other titles and other past storylines. to see what all he can start to pull in on the various runs. So maybe it does. Maybe he's doing some really long callbacks. Maybe it's some stuff that I can't remember, and that's why I'm finding it so jarring. I just really want Wally to be the Flash again.
I would be in that camp.
I'm just really desperate for him to be the Flash.
Wally is the fastest man alive. That was also reestablished, which I am quite happy about. I'm a little nervous about him going into Heroes in Crisis. I don't think that they're going to eliminate him with that, just being that they just brought him back. But I can't see them getting rid of Barry anytime soon, which is unfortunate. I think bringing Barry back from the dead kind of misses the point of it, and it kind of nullifies his sacrifice in Crisis on Infinite Earths.
That was a long time. I mean, that was a long time ago that they brought him back. We've kind of had to deal with it, but Williamson's building something.
I still haven't.
I'm hopeful that it's going to be something that puts Wally West back in the boots. And I also just want everybody, like, I wasn't a huge Impulse fan, but yeah, he's back. We haven't even touched on the fact that he's back. He showed up and then he's not there.
See, Impulse confuses the hell out of me. I actually, like, it's a character that I enjoyed as Impulse. Less or so as Kid Flash, but that was fine. And then I was intrigued when they aged him up for Flash, the fastest man alive, only to kill him off when the Rogues kind of ganged up and killed him. But then he came back as young Bart Allen. So I know that he's always been based on, except his aging has been accelerated and decelerated based on the storylines in the past. But yeah, I don't really understand him.
I'm just hopeful of some classic. Like I say, I don't want to harp on it again, but bring Wally back. That's fine.
I think they should bring back Max Mercury.
Yes. Yes.
They should bring back Max Mercury, Jesse Quick. I think she's technically still around, but I liked her better as a speedster. And of course, Jay Garrick. Like he was kind of hinted at with the button, I think.
Yeah, they had his helmet, and he actually came out for a minute or two in one of the stories. And I feel like they brought Max, something with Max recently.
Did they?
Oh. I might be completely wrong.
I can't recall at this moment. Wally's always been my Flash. Like for me, just a little bit of background. By the time I got into comics, Barry had already sacrificed himself. With the exception, you know, there was the Flash 90s TV show, which was Barry Allen, but a very different Barry Allen than what was in the comics, and I enjoyed that. But Wally West has always been the Flash to me. I've always liked his struggle to kind of find his place in the world, but also, like, step out of his mentor's shadow and become the character that he eventually became. He had, like, a pretty complete story, I guess, so, like, in a way that they kind of wrapped him up, but then now he's kind of reverted back a little bit younger with the events of New 52 and totally vanishing and having another Wallace West exist for reasons. But I would like him to come back as the primary Flash. Maybe Barry becomes more of a mentor or, you know, evolves and takes on one of these other forces if that's around to stay.
I would even take as a small tribute just getting rid of, and I'm colorblind, so I apologize, I'm assuming it's Blue Lightning that he's now got running out of him.
Yes, it is.
But if they at least got back to just the core Yellow Lightning that was coming through.
I really like that Wallace West costume from the 90s when he was kind of like that alternate Dark Wally where his like family was killed in the future and he came back. You know, like that scene where he whispers to Superman who he is and Superman vouches for him. Like, I kind of thought that costume was cool. I wouldn't have minded that coming back. I kind of hate the Kid Flash look of the new costume. I just don't know why his hair has to be exposed like that. He's kind of beyond Kid Flash at this
point.
That's
how he keeps it with such volume. It's the only way you get that nice little poof going is if you've got wind blowing.
Well, it's like, and then I think even like the colorists at DC might want Wally back because there was that issue of Superman where Barry had red hair. I think that I'm maybe, and this is just a wild conspiracy theory, but maybe Wally is coming back, and that colorist just got the memo and mixed up the timing, and just thought that was supposed to be Wally. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. But I mean, I am actually enjoying the Flash book. It's had ups and downs. It's had good parts and bad parts. I really want Howard Porter on the book again.
Yeah, classic. He's doing a lot of variant covers.
Having him through those runs was really, really good. I really liked that. It was a nice callback to some of his previous work on, even JLA with some of the stuff that went on.
I would even say that some of his work now actually is better than his work on JLA. And I think his work on JLA was incredible. Mm-hmm. So, Scott, if you had to rank the Flashes, how would you do this?
Volley West, number one. Everybody else lumped into a small group, number two. That's completely fall back on.
There goes the conversation.
There we go.
No, that's yeah.
No, to be serious, it would be Wally. I would follow it with Barry because I mean, I'll call him the original, even though technically it was Jay Garrick or whatever. But it would be Wally, followed distantly by Barry.
As Wally's tearing up the track.
As Wally's just, you know, speeding ahead. Then it would be Bart, I think Max, and then Jay. And then the whole Quick with their mathematical calculation would fall behind. Fair enough. Anybody else that's new that has picked up speed powers since would also be at the back there. I've always believed, and I remember reading this before, that I think Wally is the fastest ever.
Yeah, I think with issue 51, they established that Barry couldn't even find him because Wally basically chose not to stop running. Mm-hmm. Like they firmly, at least, I don't want to say implied it. I think they firmly stated that Wally is in fact the fastest of the Flash family, mm-hmm. Which makes sense. Like if you look back to all his whole run, Flash Volume 2, it established his command of the Speed Force.
And I think Williamson did something in a recent article where he laid out all of like the fastest people type of thing.
Oh, okay.
A bunch of the Flash didn't fall in there, but it was Wally was ahead, and then it was kind of Barry, and Superman was back in there, and apparently Cheetah and something else was in there.
I gotta love those issues where Wally and even Barry just like eclipse Superman when they want to.
And I did love that moment in that initial. When Barry comes back and Superman's talking to him when they're running, he's like, you know, we've done this race before, I can keep up. He's like, Clark, those were for charity. And then just tears away. It was absolutely fantastic reading that in the book.
It's amazing.
True nerd feelings went ape shit at that moment.
For sure.
So your ranking. What's your ranking on the Flashes?
Well, Wally West is the Flash, like, straight up. So I think that he is absolutely my number one. And I would agree with you, Barry, like, for me, I guess in my history with the Flash is the original, despite the existence of Jay Garrick and other speedsters. But I would actually put Jay Garrick as number three, followed by Bart, and then everyone else after that, like Max Mercury,
really?
Jesse Quick, yeah. There's just something about that cheesy Mercury hat, like, or whatever,
Hard water gave me my power.
Yeah, that hard water was imbued with the Speed Force, apparently. Ignoring the classic, it's like Green Lantern back there. His weakness is wood. So,
yeah.
You know, like despite that, I still think it's a. I gotta love that old costume, and I'm off topic. I can't wait for the JSA to come back.
Yes, the JSA coming back will be really cool. Getting some of those in. Again, a comic I wasn't big on, but I appreciate all of the foundational work that leads into all of the other comics. So much like, you know, Legion of Superheroes, when they finally bring that back, that's gonna help finish some things off. Like,
this is why I'm hanging on with Doomsday Clock. Those two are hinted at, and those are two big ones for me.
So. Well, already in Justice League, not to jump too far ahead, but Justice League, we've already got Starman back.
That's true.
So. And apparently it's going to lead to other Starman people coming back through as well.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a Starman corpse.
Starman core. Oh, yeah. Corpse? <Oops. laughs> If it's a corpse, we're getting into a dark book.
I have a newborn. Not enough sleep.
Not enough sleep. Fair enough. Okay. So we'll call that one a quit on the Flash talk. Hopefully we didn't lose too many people that aren't big Flash fans.
Just wanted to share our love there for a little bit.
Yes. This will come back up in future podcasts. We are obviously huge Flash people, so where we feel appropriate, we're going to throw this out at you. So the next thing we're going to get into here is hyper timing. We're going to talk about Black Hammer. So this is by Jeff Lemire and Dean Ormston. as well as Dave Stewart. This is one of my new favorite books that is being published. Anytime it goes on hiatus, a little bit like Saga, anytime it goes on hiatus, I'm a little bit bummed because I just want to see what's going to happen next and what we get into. For those of you that don't know, Blackhammer is the story of, how many is it, 5 or 6 superheroes that end up on a farm. And they can't seem to leave the town that this farm is associated to. And it's, for the longest time now, it's been the biggest mystery. The books that we're going to talk about, it is still a mystery. In the most recent issues, Blackhammer, Age of Doom, the mystery has kind of revealed itself a little bit.
Just
but we're going to focus on the core Blackhammer singular titled book.
Volume 1.
The Volume 1 stuff, thank you. So, these superheroes, all these analogies to other DC and Marvel superheroes, with the titular Blackhammer being similar to a Thor-type character who carries this big hammer and goes around.
I would almost say he's like a he's Thor in terms of like the hammer, but I'd almost even look at him as almost like a John Henry Irons, like Steel.
Oh, for sure.
And well, even like Superman, like in a lot of ways.
It's fantastic. Jeff Lemire is just taking everything and blending it all together. You've got a New Gods aspect to it, mixed with this kind of like Norse
street
stuff, with
street level villain, with characters, not
classic
villains.
DC stuff, mixed with like one of my favorite characters in it, just because she's such a little shithead, is Gale.
The Golden Gale.
Golden Gale, who is the Shazam.
Zaphram.
It's amazing.
No, I love that character too. I think it's a nice flip of the Shazam character.
Yeah, to get people caught up. She is currently in, how old is she, like a 12-year-old's body or something like that?
I think even younger. I think it's like, wasn't it like 8 or 9?
8 or 9. So in really this really young body, but she's like 60 years old.
So and stuck.
And she's stuck in this body because when she uses her magical phrase and she transforms into Golden Gale and has all of her powers, that's when she vanished. So she's vanished in this perpetual state, and she is pissed off about it. So she's this
very embittered
8 to 9 year old hard drinking, hard talking little asshole who has to go to school and do all of these other things. Oh, I love this book. I just love it.
I've never been huge with indie books, so like when you recommended it, I was a little reluctant, but when just from the first issue, I really was hooked. I like its retro style. I like that it's written in such a way that it throws back to the old classic, like Golden Age kind of comics, but with like a little modern spin and, you know, like modern dark and gritty, but like it's underselling it. Like it's kind of like a parody of those kind of comics.
It's dark and gritty, but it doesn't feel forced on it. It's kind of, it fits in because these people are stuck in this place and they don't know what the hell's happening. As soon as they got there, Blackhammer tried to leave, and he died instantly.
Was that revealed in Volume 1?
Yes, that was revealed in Volume 1.
Oh, right, the very end, towards the end, yeah.
So he, like, tried to leave and then died. So they have good
very,
reason.
Very graphically, I might say. Yeah. Like, your skin just peels off, and you just devolve into, like, just bits.
Yeah, I mean, this is just... It was amazing, but it's got reasons for them to actually be kind of, you know, dour and really miserable.
Well, like, I think it's been, about like 10 years in their time since they were trapped, yet the world continued on like they died. It's almost like the sacrifice of the Avengers, Fantastic Four, the Hulk and all that during Onslaught, where it was like a kind of a big flash and suddenly they're just gone. And now they're in this like kind of little pocket universe, so... It certainly plays into the tropes of comics past. Sometimes I find it a little, how do you put it, like a little predictable. It's a little on the nose with some of the things, but that doesn't ruin it. It actually kind of works for the style that I think Lemire's going for.
Yeah, I think it's more of, it's not trying to be boastful about anything, and he's not trying to sneak something past you. He's really kind of tipping his hat at this is what came before, so he's paying homage to it.
That's true, yeah.
And it definitely feels that way. It feels like this was an idea he's had for a long time, and if he hasn't, then holy shit, he came up with something amazing.
Well, it's
this is really well laid out.
I gotta say, I like Abraham Slam, I think is his name.
Yes.
He's kind of the Captain America proxy, where he's kind of the heart of the team. But he seems to be the only one that's kind of happy with retirement.
Yeah, well, he's the only one that's got a girlfriend. He's dating Titty Tammy. Yeah, he's the only one that's got a girlfriend. He's got a love interest. I like Madame Dragonfly. I think her...
It's a cool character.
That character with her house, which, again, is kind of like the Dr. Fate's dimensional house thing.
That's true, yeah. I guess I didn't think of that. It's like a Doctor Strange kind of proxy, but
yeah,
mixed with, like... I don't know, like Enchantress or something? Like, it's,
yeah, that's what I mean. He's like cherry-picked these really cool ideas and put them into another character. I do like the Martian in it.
Yeah. What's his name again?
What is his name? I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
It's an interesting character. Like, he's clearly... He's kind of Martian Manhunter mixed with the Vision, which is kind of what I think those two characters kind of play off each other with in terms of their creation to begin with. Mm-hmm. But it's a well-rounded balance of characters, and frankly, as we're talking about, I think I just love all the characters. It's the Randall Weird, I think is his name.
Randall Weird, yeah.
I don't fully understand his character. He's kind of like an Adam Strange.
I don't get his character in the storyline either, but with what they're doing now to it, maybe it's going to make more sense as to what he actually does.
That's true.
I don't want to... I'm intentionally not putting spoilers out there because I want people to actually read the book and kind of experience everything because it is well out there. It is a shit ton of fun, and I cannot recommend the book enough for people to check out.
Do you recommend the kind of the spin-off titles of the character? There's some minor characters that have gotten books that are kind of expanded upon. I haven't personally read those yet.
Yeah, so I think I want to talk about those at some point because I am, like, I've gone whole hog into this Black Hammer world. And yes, the Curious Case of Dr. Frankenstein or whatever it is really good. The Starman analogy one is so depressing.
Really?
So goddamn depressing, especially if you're a dad. I don't want to put too many spoilers out there.
Maybe I should hold off that book for a bit.
Damn, it was a good read. It was a really good read. There's another one, I think it's called The Quantum Age, which I haven't read everything on that one yet. But I would recommend picking up the supplemental spin-offs as well.
Would you say that this is their absolute reads when getting into Black Hammer?
No, I would say that these help just flush out the world a little bit more. The Dr. Star one, I think is what it's called, is completely self-contained. It's not one that you have to really worry too much about.
Is Dr. Star that the old guy in the later issues talking with?
I believe so, yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I'm trying not to spoil it.
And then the one with Dr. or Professor Frankenstein, I think is what it's called. I can't remember the exact title right now. It's dropping from my mind. But that one flushes out the story of the daughter, who's now a journalist, who's trying to figure out what happened to her dad. So that one kind of relates in, but it's not something you'd have to read to understand anything else in the story.
Sounds good.
So, all about that one. Okay. So now let's take a little run on the cosmic treadmill, and we can talk about the book you recommended that I read.
Bruce Wayne, Murderer and Fugitive.
Right.
So this is a storyline that took place pre-Batman Hush, pretty much anything modern Batman at this point. But it was written mostly by, I believe, Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka. With a vast number of rotating artists, which was a trend at the time. Mm-hmm. Scott McDaniel stands out the most to me. Just a little bit of background is I haven't read or touched this storyline since it was released back in the day. So I have a very nostalgic view of it. So I might not remember the ins and outs like Scott here, who just read it, having been someone who didn't read it back in the day, who has been reading Batman in its current form. So I just wanted to kind of talk about it and see how our views clash, I guess.
Okay. So I have prepared a couple notes. Not to be all nerdy, but I did prepare a couple notes.
So maybe I should say my nostalgic view first.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah,
so
let's do it that way.
just vaguely remembering it at this point because I collect a lot of comics. There's a point in time where Bruce Wayne comes back from a night of patrolling with his then partner. Oh my gosh, what's her name? Sasha Bordeaux, who was Bruce Wayne's bodyguard, I want to say, but she then eventually found out his identity and became like a costume partner of his.
Well, in order to protect him as a bodyguard, she had to protect him at all times.
Right.
That's how they played it out. Like, he had no choice but to take her out because she had no choice but to follow him out.
I guess, yeah, he had to kind of trust her, which the character of Sasha was interesting, and I actually quite liked her until they did the whole checkmate OMAC kind of thing with her, but I'm not going to get into that. But they returned from their patrol, and was her name Vesper Fairchild, who was found murdered inside Wayne Manor, viciously, I might add. And so Bruce Wayne is brought in as a suspect, and he's consequently charged with her murder. So it's, if I remember correctly, it was kind of like the struggle of whether Batman needed the Bruce Wayne persona in his life, basically, once it was compromised. So I found it to be interesting because you kind of watch Batman unhinge a little bit, which kind of relates to how he is now in a strange coincidence. But he kind of unhinges and he kind of almost sacrifices Bruce Wayne a little bit as he, you know.
Not a little bit. He full out fucking sacrifices him.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the scene in the jail. But, yeah, and it again, my memory of it is kind of loose at this time. But, like, I remember him being in jail and kind of deciding that he just needs to be Batman. And I remember the conclusion being a little lost on me because of the reveal. I wasn't familiar with the character that they brought in, but it connected to another character, the Batgirl character at the time, Cassandra Cain, which I enjoyed. I do remember the art being kind of up and down, to say the least.
That's a fucking understatement.
But I just like Scott McDaniel issues. If that makes sense, but.
Yeah.
So now that you've heard my view, Scott, what do you?
Okay.
I want to hear your.
So I've got it kind of listed reading. Out as like.
Oh, that's quite a list.
So overall, I did like it. I much preferred Murderer to Fugitive. The thing that I liked most about Murderer was, first of all, I don't know that it was actually because this was one of these bad crossovers that covered every single title, and this is usually what ends up happening with any massive crossover, is you get a bunch of different writers doing their take on your storyline. So anything that was actually Brubaker, I think I could feel better reading than any of the supplementals. It just felt more concise and more moving the story forward with what he was after.
I think that with the trade too, it kind of includes issues that were kind of unnecessary for the story. I think they were kind of like tie-ins, but not so much
that
parts.
That would explain a lot.
But that I'm just guessing at that. I would assume that because DC was really big on that at the time.
Yeah. So, like I say, I really liked the Brubaker writing on it. I felt like I could pick out the actual issues that he was because there was no because it was in the trade format, it didn't actually show you who
that's
was
doing
true, what.
Yeah.
The like you said, the prison sequence with him taking on those three guys in his cell was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I love it. That cover,
beating
too.
The hell out of them. That was absolutely amazing. It was a great little murder mystery to start with. The first half of this whole Fugitive Murder storyline was absolutely great. Murder was great. Tim Drake as Robin, I've listed as a big plus. I'm so, and it's Robin.
It's
not Red Robin.
It's something
none
I
of
missed
that stuff.
Greatly.
Like, it was just Robin.
I think comic fans right now reading Damian as Robin are missing something completely about the character of Robin, having Tim Drake relegated to whatever he is right now. Like, it's,
I don't understand what they did in the New 52 to turn him into Red Robin and how much of this continuity stuff, because the Batman stuff,
I kind of wish they
New
just erased
Rebirth is all
I just
weird.
Wish they erased Tim Drake in New 52 with the way they handled it, but that's kind of deviating
because at least he's there.
But is he though?
Well, more there than not, I would say. So, I mean, he's at least I don't know.
We'll see. Well, but that's a tangent.
I mean, there's whole parts of the whole storyline where different people are questioning whether Bruce would have done this or not. Tim totally thinks he may have done it. Dick is really pissed off that Tim thinks he may have done it. And Barbara slash Oracle is kind of on the fence about the whole thing because she's just pissed off with...
Just to put some context to that, though, the idea, like, if you were thinking of Batman right now, you'd think it's completely unbelievable to think Bruce Wayne would have done something like that. And it still is. Like, ultimately, you know he didn't do it. But at the time, Batman was kind of a much, I would say, darker character. He was a little more unhinged. People were not so much concerned, like, thinking he's a murderer, but more thinking that, has he finally snapped enough? Like, is he finally just gone over the edge? And I think that's why Tim is looking at the evidence. He's not looking at it from an emotional standpoint. He's looking at the raw evidence, and that's where I believe his belief was coming from.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that's where they do pull it out a lot in the story, is they keep talking about it. Mostly, to your point, mostly Tim and Barbara are always saying, well, the evidence doesn't show that he didn't do it. It doesn't show that he did, but it doesn't show that he didn't. And he's smart enough to be able to plant things so that it would look like anything, any other way that he wanted it to look. I did like it being Oracle. I know she's back. I know the Killing Joke is a big controversial thing. I'm not promoting fridging of people. I'm not promoting any of these kind of things. But I liked her as Oracle. I thought that was a fantastic character.
It was an evolution of the Barbara Gordon character that... Having just jumped back into this modern Batgirl, like it's something I find missing in the book. Like, they kind of still have her in the tech world, but it's not quite the same.
It's not the same. It's not the same as having Oracle. I remember, like, Oracle. It was such a strong character. She came through on every Bat book. She came through into the fucking JLA.
Yeah, that was classic.
I mean, it was it was really great to have her in that way.
This might be a topic to have.
It might be a topic, episode. Yeah. In the same way that I really liked, I believe it was Black Mirror that Snyder wrote for Batman a long time ago, where she was still Oracle at that point. I really appreciated having those kind of stories. I love the Barbara Gordon character. I was never big on the Batgirl component of it, but her... at least in the old comics. To be honest, I didn't read a lot of them, you know, pre-Killing Joke. Yeah. So I don't know how good a lot of those comics were, so I might be talking out of my ass, and I apologize for that. But
if I'm not mistaken, Barbara Gordon was created because of the 60s TV show, truthfully.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
sorry, tangent.
But the Oracle... Yeah, I'll stop on the Oracle character. So the things that I didn't like... the things that I didn't enjoy as much about this story is... A, the second half, the fugitive storyline, there was at least 3/4 of that storyline that had nothing to do with him being a fugitive. There was a lot of it on some weird Birdman thing who was going after some drugs, some heroin that was being sold.
I literally don't remember that at all.
Through the storyline. It had nothing to do. It, like, in the most tangential way, did they bookend it with... Oh, and then this guy is working for this one who may have had something to do with framing Bruce Wayne. And that's how it worked. I remember reading these issues when they came out, outside of the trade, and being completely put off the storyline. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
I almost want to guess that those were probably tie-ins and not direct parts of the story.
I don't remember. They were in the core Bat books.
Okay, so...
It was more of the following the trail of evidence to find out who's been selling the bat heroin and that kind of thing. So it did come through. I just didn't feel like it fit in with the actual story. You've already mentioned the fact about the art. I'm not great at managing colors with my eyes. I appreciate it when people can at least always show a face the same. And at some points I didn't know if I was looking at Barbara Gordon because she had long hair, she had short hair, she had weird, like, things on the go where I just did not understand who the character was that I was looking at, and it would take me a little while to figure things out.
Understandable. And, like, even this, the print quality at the time might not have been as good as it is now, too.
Yeah, it was all over the board. Pacing of the arcs felt way off. Way, way off. Outside of it just being, like, a storyline that didn't seem to fit, just the pacing... way slowed down on the fugitive component.
I'm wondering if, like, if I remember correctly, I feel like the writing for trade style was just kind of starting to happen at that time. And I think maybe they were still trying to find that balance, but then maybe there was editorial direction here where they had to pad out this story for a certain time frame. Because if I'm not mistaken, these issues actually led up to Batman Hush, which was a very it was a hugely anticipated run coming up in Batman with Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee. So it might have been something editorial to kind of expand it. Might be.
I mean, the trade itself is split into technically three across the two storylines.
True.
The Fugitive is in two of those trades. The other thing I didn't like, which happened because of this additional heroin component to it, is all of a sudden, Sasha's this huge part of the story going through murder, and then she's fucking dropped. She's just gone.
Yeah, Bruce, in that era, Batman was kind of an asshole, so he could
kind
drop.
Of, he was a full-out dick.
He would just drop anybody.
Dropped her like...
You didn't follow, you weren't in line with what he was thinking in that moment? Gone. And he left her to rot in jail, too, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, he did.
And this is somebody they establish as a love interest at some point.
Oh, yeah, she's madly in love with him, which was, like... I'm sure it fills in the rest of the stories. I didn't like it coming through in the story here, just because it after the way
there is some build up. There is some build up prior to this story for that, but
yeah,
it was pretty
just
rough.
Completely drops or doesn't come back in until the last couple.
Bat Dick strikes again.
A fugitive. Which leads to one of the comments I have in here is, why do people put up with Bruce's shit? I don't understand it. He treats them all so, so bad and then doesn't really apologize.
No.
All he does is acknowledge, yeah, I did some shitty things.
This was...
Doesn't say sorry about it.
This is kind of a part of the character in that era. Like, and this these threads kind of, like, flow all the way into like Infinite Crisis, and it was kind of like Batman having like gotten too dark and too he'd gone too far in that direction to the point that he's just unlikable. Like you don't even like what kid wants to be Batman looking at that. You know, it could be argued that Robin is the character they invented even back in the 40s to kind of like give the kid like give a child the end. You might not want to be Batman, but you definitely want to be Robin. You didn't even want to be his partner at this point in Batman comics. I don't want to blame Brubaker and Rucka for that part of his character, because I think that was a long time building and was continued on well past that.
It still that whole component of him still hasn't changed.
I think it's loosened up a little bit. I think Infinite Crisis kind of like it kind of erased. It kind of had that, post Infinite Crisis, he kind of realized that he needs to kind of bring his family back in. He can't be so closed off.
I don't think so. I mean, the most recent issue.
Right at the end, just leading into that new 50, or into the 52, sorry, the weekly series, he went off with Dick and Tim to kind of rediscover the Bat family. Like, that was kind of a point. That being said, he's kind of now the Bat Dick again.
That's what I was going to say. And okay, fair enough.
Sorry, it took me a while to get around to that.
He may have kept interrupting you.
That's okay.
But, yeah, he's definitely made that full swing back to Bat Dick, as you say, because...
Batman 54 will show.
Yeah, Batman 54 was coming through with. Okay. Now, the last point that I just want to make on this is I was a big fan of the Gotham Central run.
Okay, yeah.
I devoured those four trades. I thought they were fantastic. That was a great set of comic books. This storyline makes the GCPD look completely fucking useless.
That's because they are. They rely on
them. But the book made them, and it's written by the same guys. The book made
that's
them.
That's true. That's right.
Gotham
Central was the two of them.
It was such a big swing because it was here's a bunch of cops that are not incompetent. Oh, wait, they look completely incompetent in this storyline.
Maybe
now,
they were
complacent.
Maybe they put their faith in the Bat God at the time.
I might be wrong, and like Gotham Central might have come well after this one.
I feel like Gotham Central came around that same era, actually. Don't quote me, but I think it was probably one of the things they did after this storyline. So maybe they themselves realized that they wrote the Gotham PD as kind of useless.
Yeah.
And they kind of wanted to redeem those characters.
It was hard reading it when I was like, no, these guys are better than this.
Yeah.
They're so much better than this.
Speaking of Gotham PD, like, what are the odds that one cop was Detective Allen would become the Spectre and Renee Montoya would become the Question? Like, what are the statistical odds that two cops in Gotham PD would become like new entities in the DC universe?
Pretty high in comics.
Yeah, apparently.
Pretty high. You fart the wrong way, you'll get some kind of magical power. Yeah. So all in. All in. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed Murder more than Fugitive, as I've said like 5 times now. I would say that's probably about, I would give this like a 7.5 out of 10 if I was combining the two stories. I'd give Murder on its own, even with its cliffhanger ending of Bruce taking off and really, or Batman taking off and getting rid of the Bruce persona, whatever. I'd rate that one a little bit higher, but as a combined story, it really gets dragged down by the inconsistent art. Gets dragged down by this really strange heroin component for me it just really felt out of place, especially because all of a sudden the big bad that comes out is Cassandra Cain's dad is the one that ended up killing,
spoiler
for a decades old book, the Cassandra Cain's dad is ended up as the actual murderer,
David Cain,
because he was hired by Lex Luthor as president of the United States at this time.
Oh, all early 2000s DC.
All of a sudden, it pulls in. Lex Luthor is the one behind the whole thing.
If I'm not mistaken, this is a callback to Batman No Man's Land.
Yes.
Where Bruce screwed Lex out of the land deal.
Yes.
And I think this was his like ultimate payback.
And that's what they say. And they wrap, but they wrap all of that up in the final issue.
Yeah.
That all comes together in the very last issue. All of these other little threads that never existed then appear and come together in the very last issue. It was,
again, I think this is the style. This was the evolving style of written for trade. It didn't kind of exist, I think, prior to this. It was kind of in that era, it was becoming a thing. Now it's so, they've got a well-oiled machine where you start read the first issue and you know it's written for trade and it's going to be a long 6 to 12 issue storyline. Back then, this was kind of like one of the earliest ones that I can recall where it had this massive storyline that spanned over I don't know if it was like a year or 2 years, but it was certainly a lot of issues and not indicative of the style at the time.
Okay. So what would you, I say 7.5 better.
Yeah, my nostalgic view, I would have given Murderer an 8 or a 9 out of 10. It's kind of the Batman stories that brought me back into the fold at the time. Fugitive, I'd probably give it a 6 because I found the ending to be a little lackluster. And even though I didn't remember the bad heroin plot line and all that other stuff, I remember feeling like Bruce is just, like, how can he give up Bruce Wayne? Like, it just didn't fit for me, even, and then, again, like I said, the ultimate conclusion. David Cain, I had no idea who the character was. Didn't even know Cassandra had a dad at the time. And, you know, it would have made more sense for Deathstroke, even though he was kind of a D-lister at the time, which is another conversation we can have future episode.
I don't want to talk about Deathstroke.
Why is Deathstroke so popular?
Can we just leave it at why is Deathstroke?
It could be. Yeah.
I don't fucking care.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was interesting. So how do you think that this holds up compared to modern Batman?
I can see modern Batman is where he is now because of stories like this.
Okay. I would agree.
That being said, I think we've had much better storylines come out of then.
Well, I think that Batman Hush couldn't have been what it was without this.
You're big on Hush.
I am.
I'm not as big on Hush.
That's another conversation.
So that is something for us to debate again as well. I'm not as big on Hush. I actually prefer Court of Owls storyline.
You know what?
More
this
recently.
Will shock you. I would agree. But
that's good.
I have my reasons for Hush, and we'll get into that some other
time. And even though I'm down on Dark and Gritty, like, I'm still a big fan of Year One. I'm still a big fan of Dark Knight Returns.
Well, see, I think that you have to understand Dark and Gritty to write Dark and Gritty.
Yes.
And I know that doesn't sound clear when I say that, but it really is. If you don't get what works in Dark and Gritty, you can't write it. And like, I think people just think, oh, having a dark background and angry characters equals Dark and Gritty. That's not the case, and it's got to be intriguing, and it's got to fit the mindset of the reader. And a lot of Dark and Gritty books are just kind of, it's almost like why torture porn movies don't work. Mm-hmm. It's like mm-hmm. you don't quite understand it, but you're writing what you think it means, and it doesn't sit well with
no,
the
it
reader.
Has to have a, it has to have a place in the story.
It has to make sense.
A lot of what has happened before and after some of these storylines is just there for the sake of it being there. Much like I said, Black Hammer is quote unquote Dark and Gritty. I mean, when I picked this up at Fan Expo, because I really wanted to have the trades, they actually had just a post-it on it that said Sad Superheroes.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was like, well, that's fucking fitting, because it is. It's just Sad Superheroes.
That's and brilliant. I like that.
But it fits, and it's because it takes place in the story. It's a natural thing that works in that story. So I can appreciate where this put Batman on some things. I can't appreciate all the steps that have led to him being back to where he is now.
So then one final point about this. How would you feel about Brubaker and Rucka coming back to write Batman post-Tom King?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. They both write really, really great books. They are fantastic storytellers. So, I'm game for anybody to write. Don't get me wrong. I like Tom King's run. I don't like the first part of his run. That whole
I think he needed to find his legs and
Gotham
I think he's
thing
kind of found it. Yeah,
really bad. I did not enjoy those
characters. Literally kept me from jumping on the book at all.
Yeah, they
until later.
I had a hard time. Since then, he's gotten a lot better. I really loved his Vision run and all that kind of stuff. So, I am more than interested in seeing anybody else have a new take on these guys.
All right,
that's my opinion. Okay, so let's get into our pick of the week discussion. So I read about 12 or 13 books. You've had the entire episode to go and decide what it is to finalize your pick of the week. Do you want me to start first?
Yeah, or
do you
I'm actually kind of curious to hear what your pick is. I'm curious to see if I was right in my head.
My pick of the week for this week is actually, I will pull it up directly so that I have it in front of me. My pick of the week is actually Cosmic Ghost Rider.
I knew it.
Number 3.
I knew it.
It is just an absolutely amazing book. It is so much fun. If nobody has been reading it, it's Donny Cates. Let me just look up the names. Dylan Burnett, Antonio Fabella, Clayton Cowles doing lettering. It is just bombastic, crazy, amazing fun. So this is taking the character, the Cosmic Ghost Rider that was created for the, I believe it was the Thanos Wins ending storyline for Thanos' previous book that Donny Cates was writing, and now turns him into Thanos' dad, basically, is where the story's going.
What?
The Cosmic Ghost Rider went back in time to kill Thanos as a baby. Thanos as a baby ends up punching him in the face, and he realizes that he can't kill him, that he's just not capable of killing a kid, because the Cosmic Ghost Rider, for those that you don't know, is actually a Herald of Galactus who was five steps back. Frank Castle is
the
Ghost Rider as a Cosmic Herald of Galactus.
That's awesome.
So I'll let that sink in for a minute of the degrees there.
That's not even the strangest thing they've done with the Punisher. So,
so
I'm okay with it.
I mean, this was just reading it. And in this issue, Cable shows up with a whole bunch of heroes to stop him because, to no one's surprise, Frank Castle / the Ghost Rider / a Herald of Galactus being a father figure to Thanos doesn't work out well in the future. They recognize this, so they come back in time. So there are just page after page of body slides that are happening with Cable going back and picking up new heroes as all these other heroes are getting decimated. There's a Howard the Duck in the Juggernaut outfit. There's a Rocket Raccoon wearing a metallic Groot costume. There's Kamala Khan as like a Captain America type character. I'm just trying to. I'm looking through the art right now just to see who else is there. Jubilee is there, because Jubilee, another character I just don't understand. And it's just, it's absolutely amazing. And on top of that, Galactus shows up.
That is so.
And Galactus starts fighting the same people that are trying to kill one of his heralds because he can't allow harm to befall one of his heralds.
Now let me ask you.
It is amazing.
Is this story considered a parallel world, or is this the future of the Marvel 616?
I have no fucking idea. And to be honest, I don't care. I am loving it. This is just crazy, crazy fun. I don't know how. The only way I can assume that he's getting away with storylines like this, because he's doing similar things in, I mean, he's writing the Venom book right now, and he's introducing new components to the Venom character that didn't exist. He's writing, I believe, another Thanos book right now. On the previous Thanos one, Thanos killed himself after beating the Silver Surfer, who also had amazing power. Like, it's just been absolutely insane. But because he's got this time traveling component, I'm wondering if it's, they're just like, yeah, go nuts, so long as it all gets sealed off when you're done with all of your time travels.
It's intriguing, like what you're saying here about Donny Cates with this. It's got me intrigued about maybe his Venom run.
It's I'm not a huge Venom character person. I'm not big on the character Venom, but I'm enjoying the book that he's writing. It's out there and it's different, and it's introducing new aspects to the character instead of it just being some humdrum stuff. I will say my favorite panel in this issue of Cosmic Ghost Rider, which may have been actually what pushed it over the top, Cable travels back in time, gets some Pym particles, comes back, shrinks Galactus, puts him inside a cannon, and shoots him out of the cannon to get rid of him. Shrinks him down, puts him in his gun, and just blows him away to hell that he can't come back and fight him. It is
That's brilliant.
Fantastic.
That's actually brilliant.
When I read it, I was like, oh, holy shit, how has no one ever thought of doing that? It's
Poor
absolutely
Cable.
Amazing. You should definitely read it. It is just crazy, crazy fun. Lots of Cosmic Ghost Rider just killing the Marvel Universe, basically. It could easily be turned into that kind of title. And to cap it off, it ends with Thanos coming from the future in full Punisher gear.
Oh my god.
I read that book and I was like, holy shit, Cosmic Ghost Rider might be my pick this week.
Wow.
And when I was done, I was like, oh my god, it is definitely my pick this week. I didn't have as much fun reading books as I had with this.
I wish I read it. Wow. I have to jump back into this. This is bonkers.
It is absolutely insane. I love it. I am on board right now.
All right.
Donny Cates, I will read your books.
Wow.
So that is my pick.
My pick of the week is not going to line up with that, I don't think. But I was struggling with my choice this week. Anyone who knows me probably would have thought, oh, Batman 54 for sure. And I do like the idea of a father-son story, but it tying back to the Bruce Wayne murderer there a little bit. Like Bat Dick is back, and I don't like it. I don't like it. And like Dick was written, Dick Grayson, Nightwing was written in such a way that I felt it's de-aged him, and that is probably in part with the whole rebirth thing. But he felt kind of like almost a little too happy-go-lucky. I felt like I was reading like the adult version of like Burt Ward.
That's what I was worried about.
And like I take issue with that. Like, I don't think Nightwing would have been this way, and maybe it's because I haven't been in the Nightwing book for long with the rebirth era, but it threw me off. So Batman 54, I'm sorry, Tom King, because I love your run, but that was one of the least favorite this week. I'm gonna have to say that I had a couple choices, and there was Justice League number 7. There was Green Arrow number, I can't remember the number at this point. It doesn't matter. Justice League number 7 was my book this week. It's written by Scott Snyder and was drawn by Jimmy Chung. If if you remember him from Young Avengers. He also drew issue one of Justice League. I can't get over how awesome this book is. It's like watching Justice League Unlimited mixed with Morrison Porter's like JLA run. Just, it's so over the top, so like bombastic. And after number six, where the League just gets their asses handed to them, Batman's practically crippled in a bodysuit. Like, he's...
Yeah, when I saw the art reveal for that, I was like, what suit is he wearing now?
It kind of throws back to Kingdom Come, if you look at it a little bit. It kind of looks like that exoskeleton thing.
It really does, that
very well could be, because there's an upcoming issue says he's going to be taking on the Legion of Doom in a full body cast, so that's, I'm looking forward to that. But in this issue, Luther has seized control of the Totality, which is this MacGuffin that's in his hands. That's apparently the design or blueprint for the universe, which apparently shows that our world's supposed to be really dark. Again, dark and gritty, wow. Right? So in this issue, there's so much going on. Hot Girl is all that stands between Luther and basically total victory for the Legion of Doom. Superman is kind of floating out in the ether there. I'm not quite sure where. He's somewhere inside the area towards the Totality, but he's kind of just staying there. I don't know if the... I think the Hot Girl Luther battle is actually in his body still. As bonkers as that sounds.
No, they were outside of the body.
Did they get it? Okay,
so... Because they made it to the center of where it was. But I had that same thing of I couldn't remember and I couldn't keep track of
if there's
where the hell are
it. Yeah, like people? If that was one criticism of the story is like it's so much happening that you kind of lose track of that. Sorry, I meant to mention that they stealthily added to Vandal Savage's origin where he saw this Totality or something in the past, and that's what turned him from a leader of like a noble leader of his tribe to a conqueror. Mm-hmm. But Hawkgirl really, really, like, just lets it rip on Luther, and, like, he just, like, something has, I think it has to do with her, and was it Nth Metal, wings, have some sort of reaction to the Totality, and it kind of, like, doesn't respond to what Luther's wanting to do, and she just kind of, like, clocks him, and basically, she seizes control of it, so the League actually ends up victorious. I'm skipping ahead there a little bit, but the Flash has to tap into the Still Force, which is like the opposite, obviously, of the Speed Force. Mm-hmm. And he's struggling because the Martian Manhunter and John Stewart have basically turned the whole Earth into a White Lantern, which is like just bonkers to me. I don't really... It's just such a crazy thing to happen, but it's a very limited thing they're holding on, and they need Flash to kind of close the doorways of this Nexus or portal or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the Flash has to find complete stillness, which...
Let's go Zen. He needed Max Mercury at that point.
Yeah, he really did.
He the Zen Master, the Speed Force, to help him.
But it was cool to see the Flash pushed to that that level, and he also now has seen a glimpse of whatever this design or Totality is, so I expect this to have some kind of ramification for the Flash going forward. Maybe even in Heroes in Crisis, I'm not sure. Another criticism would be Aquaman and Wonder Woman. They're just kind of standing around still.
I didn't really understand what happened to them in the last issue because they're
still pondering.
Fighting,
yeah,
and then they were just standing there again.
They're kind of just pondering why there was Atlantean and Amazonian tech in this underwater base thing that they were in the previous issue. And, you know, I guess because they're just there.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm guessing that they're going to be revealed that they're of the same people that, you know, descent, like, split off into like two different I think they originate from the same peoples, and they their lines deviated based on their environments.
I don't feel like that's a new thing though that's happened in the comics.
It's kind of been implied in the past.
Always kind of,
it's a little strange, but maybe that's where the men come from, I don't know. But Superman is there trying to inspire hope. Just looking at the art here. Cyborg is somehow projecting the Martian Manhunter's status, which has made the Earth a White Lantern, which is fighting back the new Ultraviolet Corps, which is run by Sinestro. And John Stewart, who previously lost his Green Lantern ring, somehow manifests a new one to like fight back against the ultraviolet.
When did he lose his ring?
Because shattered in a previous issue. When I think it was issue 1 or 2, when Sinestro attacks him, he tries to repel the ultraviolet.
Right. Okay.
And it shatters his Green Lantern ring.
Right.
So John's now a little like iffy, wondering what the hell is going on with like where this ring came from. He's kind of unsure of himself. Him and Martian Manhunter make amends for what happened in a previous storyline where Jon Stewart caused the deaths of billions of people, apparently. Mm-hmm. There is one cool part with Aquaman. He like kind of takes off in mid-fight to command a legion of gigantic sharks to like, attack Black Manta and Cheetah. And
Megalodons show up.
It's like, seriously, Megalodons. Like, I've never seen sharks that big in my life, but... They apparently live down near Atlantis, so mm-hmm. that was kind of cool. But yeah, my standout would be Hawkgirl just poning Luthor. Like, yeah, it was pretty awesome.
I like that line of, oh, you know, in all your centuries of lives and everything like that, have you learned anything? She's like, yeah, I've learned one thing, how to swing.
Yeah,
and
then just like nails him.
Knocks him across. Now, I do have one question for you.
Yes.
In one of the last panels, and it's one of the pieces of art that have been around, is that Man-Bat?
So, yeah, I haven't read the story, but he is apparently a redeemed character now. So I believe it's Kirk Langstrom still. I'm not saying that with 100% certainty, but Man-Bat is now considered like a good character. Almost like the Lizard, you know, like...
Right.
He's kind of bad, but he's kind of good now.
Okay. Because that threw me for a loop. I was like...
Yeah, I'd have to look into it further, but I remember seeing something with Man-Bat being kind of redeemed. A little strange. Couple other things to point out about this issue. So out there, Jon Stewart and Martian Manhunter make amends. Flash is a little shaken by what he's seen. They're going to go off on a quest. It's going to be Jon Stewart and Martian Manhunter and I think Hawkgirl. Are going to go off on a side mission that's going to come up in a future issue. They've got to go back to Thanagar to talk to the White Martian archivist mm-hmm. character that they kind of introduced in a previous issue to get answers. But the big reveals are the Starman. I'm not overly familiar with the character, but Starman shows up and tells the League that he's from the past. And he's got all the answers they need, but... three of them must die, and that's kind of left at that for the next issue. Mm-hmm. So it's intriguing. And then we have a cut back to the Legion of Doom where Luther's kind of like pitying himself and just can't. He's looking worse for wear. He got his ass beat. He snaps Vandal Savage's cane, and he's walking in and he's talking to somebody. And this might be my least favorite reveal because I'm not a metal fan at all. Was it just DC Metal? DC Metal. The Batman Who Laughs, is that his name?
Yeah.
Batman Who Laughs is revealed to be working with Luthor. He's saying, you were right, I need your help. And you hear laughter like the Joker, and then but it's in red, and you realize it shows a big last page of the Batman Who Laughs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how much I care about this character.
I know.
Revealed saying, I thought you'd never ask, laughing hysterically, and cut to the credits. I expected this to come back into play, considering he survived Metal, and you knew that Snyder really liked this character.
Well, Snyder said that he was going to be bringing him back, that he would be back, that he wasn't going to be going anywhere.
Didn't even read that. But I'm not a huge fan of the character. As much as I like over on the Marvel end, I like Ben Reilly as the Scarlet Spider. I'm not a huge fan of duplicates and doubles and parallel versions of characters, which seems to be really huge right now. And that can tie into our talk about the Clone Saga on another issue. Mm-hmm. But this was something that they tried to get away from, and now it's full force that we've got duplicates and copies all over the place. And I am still on board with Justice League. I love this issue. We'll see where it goes. But in terms of this particular issue, I'd give this a 9 out of 10. I really think it's a must read. it's a fitting conclusion, I think, to the first arc here. And I believe this is the conclusion of the Totality storyline.
I think it'll be really good when it's collected in trade, or if you just read all issues back to back.
Yes.
It'll make a lot more sense.
Yeah, and I think this issue definitely worked for me as a whole with the rest of the previous issues. Mm-hmm. But I just like that the storyline had the League get their ass handed to them, and then they kind of pull through.
Okay.
Did you want to talk about your runner-up very briefly?
To be honest, I didn't really have a runner-up. The runner-ups would have been in the Justice League realm. I have been reading some of the... Well, this was last week, so no. My runner-up would have just been probably the Justice League a little bit more begrudgingly. But this was, like... It just wasn't close. I read it. I had a hell of a lot of fun. That one just secured it for me.
I got to check that out.
So,
just want to give a quick shout out to Green Arrow this week. It's an interesting storyline. I haven't been in Green Arrow for a long time. This is the first time I'm kind of checking back into it with this current storyline, Citizen's Arrest. It's intriguing, and I'm kind of curious to see where it goes. So I'd say it's worth checking out. And I think you told me about another book you wanted to just kind of call out.
Yes. So if anybody has been reading any of the Marvel stuff, and this ties into kind of the bombastic nature of some of this, we've been talking just off air about a couple different things, and I have been thoroughly enjoying the Extermination storyline that has come out.
It's awesome.
And picking up some of the more recent X-Men Blue issues. And it feels like it's just getting back to the crazy X-Men fun, where they're just doing these massive, massive story crossover type of events. And it's getting really, really good. I'm really excited for where this is going to go, and hopefully brings back some of that. The X-Men have been kind of in this really weird state, and they were ignored for a while and kind of left out as people were trying to build up Inhumans and
thanks,
everything
Disney,
like that.
Thanks, Disney, for buying Fox.
Yeah, but now that... people are just getting back to, you know, let's get X-Men back to where they used to be.
This series feels like 90s X-Men its best. Like, it's there's no event series like an X-Men event series. And, like, it's just really pulled me right back in after years of being absent. I just couldn't stand, you know, duplicate X-Men. I was kind of intrigued with the young X-Men showing up. And then it outstayed its welcome for me.
It has definitely been longer than
Magneto being a hero and, like, all that kind of stuff. Like, and I liked Age of Apocalypse where he was the leader, but that was Age of Apocalypse. I'm glad to say that Magneto, spoiler, is back as evil Magneto sitting on his asteroid there.
Yeah, if we had gotten back into Pick of the Weeks from last week, X-Men Blue was very close to me because Asteroid M, Magneto back up there with his new Brotherhood. He's back awesome. On the seat of where he should be. So I was really, I'm really enjoying that. That's another little series that I recommend people check out if they can. If you're an X-Men fan, you will not be disappointed.
Extermination is definitely pulled me back in. I'm loving this series, even though it's only two issues in, and I can't wait for issue three. It really feels like it's ramping up towards Uncanny X-Men's relaunch, which I'm now really excited about. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend that in a heartbeat. I don't know if that came out this week, but if it didn't, I don't care. Check it out.
Yeah, I think it came out last week, which means on the Marvel schedule it's probably coming out again this week. So check it as it's coming out in this next week in September. So I think we're running a little long, so I think we're going to drop the I don't get it component. This has definitely been a giant-sized issue it's turned into. So,
but why is Iron Man so popular? I guess we're going to have to find out later.
Yeah, if you know, you can write us an email at terminalvelocitypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts.
Yep, sorry, Scott.
That's okay.
Yeah, check us out at Twitter at Comics Terminal.
Or you can always drop off on the website and leave a comment there, terminalvelocitypodcast.com.
And our email, did you say?
Yep, I already covered the Gmail. So if anybody has any questions, comments, those are kind of the best places to hit us up. And that's it for this week. So
click like and subscribe. That's all I can say.
Yes, whatever podcatcher you end up using, whatever you can do, click subscribe, like us, leave a comment, let us know, and we'll be checking things out. Thanks very much for listening.
Until next time.
See ya.